Adventist World Radio SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.
We're living in the age of digital gold, but every gold rush comes with bandits. As Africa races into the future, building smart cities, digitizing economies, and expanding connectivity, something darker is growing in the shadows. Cybercrime is no longer the stuff of Hollywood thrillers. It's here. It's real. And it's robbing the continent of billions. But the bigger question is, are we ready? Tonight, we're joined by Muyowa Mutemwa, cybersecurity specialist, digital watchdog, and one of the continent's sharpest minds on tech threats and trends. We're not just talking firewalls and phishing. We're talking geopolitics, skill development, data sovereignty, and digital accountability. So buckle up. This isn't just a conversation. It's about to be a crash course on the battlefield. We're all already in. Muyowa, good evening and welcome back to the show.
Evening and welcoming back.
At some point, we must give you your own mic and your own little booth because you're a friend of the show. We love you over here.
No, thanks. Thanks. I like the intro.
I love that you love it. Let's start with this. Forget the headlines. When you look at cybercrime in Africa today, what's the real story you think we are missing?
So I think the real story is we probably are underestimating the impact it has on our lives.
Okay.
And we are also underestimating the impact it has for the organizations we work for or the companies we run.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what is this impact, if you don't mind just giving us a high-level view?
Well, when we look at impact, we essentially talk about what's the worst that could wrong.
Mm.
You know, it's like when you're driving a car and you say that it was an impact collision.
Mm-hmm.
It means that either that car is not drivable after that, people inside the car could be injured. So for us, that's the impact in a nutshell.
I love that you give these analogies to make it easy for everybody to understand. I think at the end of this conversation, if anybody came on here thinking, cybercrime, what is that? They'll walk away so enriched because you bring it down to everybody's level so we can understand exactly what you're saying. I really appreciate that.
Let's hope so.
Now, in what ways has Africa's rapid digitization, and I'm talking about mobile money, e-services, startups, in what way has all of that made us both powerful and exposed? And what don't we see coming until it's too late?
All right. So that's a good question. Let's talk about the nice things about technology.
Yeah.
So one of the first things is, you know, when I talk to my parents, it used to be a big struggle for them to send money back home, right? They would probably have a friend who'd come visit them in the towns where they live. And then they would give them money and say, please, by the way, can you give this to my mother or my father?
For sure.
And that friend would take a percentage for themselves, you know? Almost like a transportation finder's keeper's fee.
A commission.
Yes, commission, you know? And sometimes they would not tell the parents how much they were given.
Oh, no. You know?
So what IT and technology and things have allowed us to do is we can send money home.
Yeah.
And we can transact without actually being in the same vicinity or in the same physical location. And you know, back home, they can need something today. And just like that, by pressing, you know, buttons on your phone or touching your screen, rather.
Yeah.
Instantly money is flowing there and they're able to transact and live. So those are some of the nice things that it has allowed us to do.
Yeah.
And maybe just one last one. It has allowed us to keep in touch. You know, back in the day, my father talks about writing letters to my mother.
Oh, so romantic.
I know, right? So it has allowed us to communicate in real time.
Yeah.
You know, you can video call and you can talk to someone.
Yeah.
It's nice. And I think that the good side of the technology is great.
Mm.
The challenge that comes with that, with this example that I said in terms of transferring money, is that inability, and I like that word, inability to sometimes verify that the person you're giving the money to is the correct person. Right? Or sometimes the person you're communicating with who's giving you or outlining the need of why they need this money might not be the correct person.
For sure.
Yeah, so those are the challenges, and people who, you know, those people who used to take commissions, we are not saying it's the same people, but there are scammers that have stepped in now to sort of take money sometimes that isn't there because you're sacrificing to send home and that money isn't there. So these scammers are taking that money and misusing it for their own stuff. So those are some of the challenges that we face.
And what don't people see coming until it's too late?
So a lot of what people don't see, now let's transition into the business setting. So someone runs their own company, an SMME doing just well. What they don't see coming is they don't think that they will be a victim. So they always think, you know, like this story which just broke a few hours ago, that South African Airways was compromised in the cybersecurity breach. And I think a week or 2 weeks ago it was MTN. So they always think, ah, the big companies, you know, my small little shop corner here won't be impacted by this. Yeah, you know, it's like saying the cars that get into accidents, it's the big trucks, you know, my small little car here, it's fine on the road, it can maneuver through the traffic. And so we think sometimes we are safe and we don't see breaches coming that could put us out of business. Yeah.
Also, I think we overestimate our ability to be able to push back when the threat comes. So we don't even pay attention to the trainings or to word that goes out about these things because we believe, I'll quickly pick up if it's a scam. But it's a scam and designed the way it is to confuse you and dumbfound you.
And it's 100%. Just as a fun fact, there's a cybersecurity professional called Troy Hunt. He's quite a renowned speaker. I think he's even set up a service where you can check if your account has been leaked in a data breach somewhere. The service is called Have I Been Pwned? So this cybersecurity professional, he's quite big. He travels the world to speak. You know, he's got a podcast where he talks about cybersecurity. I think a month or 2 months back, he actually got hacked.
No, not him.
Yes, him. So what happened was these guys sent him an email saying that MailChimp, which he uses to send out emails, had blocked him because he was sending out spam. Now, spam is just unsolicited emails, meaning you're not asking for the emails, but you're getting so many of those emails. And sometimes these service providers can block you. So these guys say to him, you've been blocked, click on this link and unblock yourself and write us a note. So in his hurry, because he was busy with stuff, you know, he quickly clicked and he put in his password quickly. And next thing he knew, these guys were into his account, even though they had two-factor authentication. And the two-factor authentication, he put it into their website. And everything was just done very quickly. They downloaded his mailing list, and that was it. So the point of the story is, even cybersecurity professionals, sometimes we take for granted that, not me, I'm not a target. I know what I can see it coming. And that tends to be somewhat a danger.
You know what stresses me with what you're saying is that just like there's psychology of this, psychology of there's also a psychology to scamming. It's a whole profession.
That's true. We actually call that psychology social engineering.
You see.
So that's social engineering. For those who want to see it in action, just go to YouTube and say, how can I enter a building with a ladder? Right? So for some odd reason, these guys ran a couple of experiments where they tried to enter different buildings just holding a ladder. And people would let them in. Just imagine the security guard. He's there insisting someone needs to go and fetch the identification, but he sees these two guys with a ladder and then he opens for them even.
Oh no. Can I tell you something similar happened to me today? I hope my bosses are not listening. So I got here while there were people still working, right? So this Baba is in aprons, he's got lunch boxes, and I can see him at the door trying to get in, right? But I'm not paying attention because there's a receptionist, they'll be able to open for them. So later, sometime later, he comes to the car and he's like, "Please help me come in." In my mind, I'm like, "Oh, he's working in the building." I mean, he's... and you know, as I'm at the door, I'm thinking, "Bumi, this could be anybody. Anybody." And so it works because you're thinking these people are of no threat, they are no harm. Can't eat, they're very ones who can pose the greatest danger to your operations.
100%. There's actually another video where a lady sort of plays a baby crying recording on the phone, and she's talking to the bank of a supposed husband and says to them, "You know, my husband is about to get home," and she's just stressing. You can hear the baby crying in the background, and the person who's dealing with her is just sympathizing because they understand the struggles of a mother trying to find things that the husband isn't sharing. You know, like for example, the medical aid number. Did they not disclose it? So that social engineering tends to be a real factor in our field.
Yo. Now you work with threats daily. What's the attack or vulnerability that still keeps you up at night, even with all your training?
So I would say it is business email compromise. Business email compromise, or what we call BEC, is sort of started in Nigeria. You know, the 411 scams, the ones where there was the prince. The person is a prince and you have to send them money, but they're a prince.
To unlock your
Or,
inheritance.
yes, to unlock your inheritance and things like that. So that one still keeps me up at night because the number of people that fall victim to that, especially in the corporate space, it's quite high. But because, you know, as you own a company, you are always looking for opportunities because you employ people. There's a pressure of, I need to bring money in, otherwise people won't get paid. So that pressure sometimes gets to you in a sense that you are easily
Oh my.
clicking on opportunities that aren't really opportunities. Someone says to you, they've looked up your LinkedIn, your posts on social media, and they say, "Oh, we know what this person is into. So let's send them something that's looking like a business opportunity that, you know, we can compromise them on." So that tends to be the one that keeps me awake at night, the business email compromise. The second one is more on the personal side, which is what we call pig butchery. You know, like a pig, where you fatten the pig and then you slaughter it. So that one, it has to do with romance scams. So it's transitioned from romance scams to actually pig butchering, where you find that someone is in a relationship with Brad Pitt. And Brad Pitt is getting divorced to his latest wife. I'm not sure who that is.
I don't know
And
either.
the person will send money because Brad Pitt's assets are frozen because, you know, divorce can cause assets sometimes to be frozen. People will be pumping in money until the money is gone. So that one is the second one that keeps me awake because mostly it's the friends and the relatives who call me and say, "Listen, I genuinely thought this person was real, so I gave them
Oh
money."
man, oh man. I'm curious about the one you mentioned earlier, business email compromise, right? And I don't know if this will be now fringing on trade secrets, but what are the ways you are working around that to curb it at some point? Because I can imagine at some point you want to sleep.
Yeah, look, they are not trade secret in on the show. I'm not sure. I'm here to share knowledge.
Yay.
Yeah. So the way we try to minimize it, number one is we educate companies. We also encourage companies to find information and educate themselves. You know, simple things and small things like these SMSs. I got one today that said, there's a parcel coming from the courier guy.
Oh, I get those
Yeah,
every
I need to click
day.
on the link.
Yeah.
Right? So people need to realize these things and educate themselves. So we encourage people to educate themselves. Either we do it or they find information to educate themselves.
Yeah. So the
The
key
second one
really
is,
is education.
yes, the first one is education. You have to educate yourself. Because you can think of the tale of, you know, the city called Troy, where there was that Trojan horse or something. You can have a good castle with good gates, but if you are susceptible to opening the gate and going inviting this wooden horse into your castle, it doesn't matter what security measures you will have in place. You will click on links, and that's why we say education is very important. And then the second one is just around tools that you can implement. So businesses that can afford, right? Well, not all businesses are the same. So there are some paid for mail services, right? So your email services that you pay for, like for example, through Google, through Microsoft, they're professional paid for emails. You need to transition your company from the free services, because those ones don't have those blocking mechanisms. It's usually the paid for services one that allows you to do that. They come with a tool that filters that type of email specific to your needs and so on. So that would be the second one. Getting tools, especially around email, that can detect these phishing emails or this business compromise in emails and block them.
Now, many firms think they're secure. Then one breach exposes everything. Why is it that even with robust measures in place, attackers still get through? What are we blind to, or where are we blind?
So I think maybe let me answer that question by giving you the third one. So I gave you two:
Ah,
awareness training,
fantastic.
some tools. The third one would be, when you get an email, open the part that says from, have a look at it, and see if it makes sense.
Yeah, dankie. As I've
Right.
gotten into the habit of doing that, when I see JKF, I'm like,
Yes. The other thing is, look at the emails that they're asking you to respond to. So, for example, I'm not sure if this person will be amused with me, but I doubt they will have an issue. I have a very close family member who sent me an email, forwarded email, and said, "Hey, listen, I'm not sure about this tender opportunity." And so I said, "Okay, fine, send it to me. Let me have a look." The email the tender opportunity was supposed to go back to was dohprojects.co.za. So that's supposed to stand for Department of Health Projects.co.za. And it was saying, you have been awarded the letter, so contact us to so that we can, you know, facilitate the purchase order, things like that. So I say to him, okay, no problem. Let's look at the information. So the first thing we did was it was name at dohprojects.co.za. So I took the dohprojects.co.za part, and then I took it to a website called abuseipdb.com. So if you forget the name, it's abuseipdb.com. You can search for it, you'll find that. So when I put that there, it told me that particular website had been known for scamming people and phishing. So, in essence, these are some of the ways that we actually use to detect and find out if something is true or not. I'm not sure if I answered your question.
Yeah, you have. I hear you. You know what it's sounding like to me? With the world forcing us to always move quickly because things are moving so rapidly, right? It sounds like what this cyber crime situation is actually calling us back to is to relax, to check things, to not respond before we've actually evaluated and understood, to not just keep going, 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 because it really sounds to me like you have to be grounded, otherwise you won't spot any of these things because they are so subtle, they're so hidden. If you are desperate and if you're in a rush, it is so easy to fall in the trap.
Well, sometimes it's too good to be true.
Ah, there's that too.
It's too good to be true, and they want an immediate response. Yeah, because the reality is, if they can get you to respond quickly, the damage is already done. Especially with these WhatsApp, when they steal your number on WhatsApp, they usually call you and tell you something that you need to do immediately. As soon as you do that, your number is taken. Yeah.
Hey, we are in danger. Let's talk talent at this moment. Africa is hemorrhaging cybersecurity expertise, either to global markets or because of a lack of access and exposure. How do we create a pipeline that's homegrown, that's future fit, and fiercely African?
So the first thing, I think we need to have interest. So interest is very important. And the interest can be simplified to this term. We need to have a desire from young people who are naturally curious to enter into this field. So I'm one person who, when I see a door, I want to open it. When I see a link, I want to click on it. So we need to have people who are naturally curious entering into this field. The second one is, we need to then educate them, or they need to find opportunities to be educated. And then there's nothing wrong with them going to other nations outside of Africa and actually learning more. But the idea is, at some point, they should come
Come
back and
back.
contribute to some of the challenges we face here. And they come back with better knowledge in terms of maybe how to improve the processes of the things that we're doing. And I think that would be a good thing. Because I think oftentimes, when you look at the African sort of skilled professional layer, it's always living for the United States, for Europe, for China, and those economies tend to benefit more. But I'm not saying they shouldn't go, but I'm saying at some point they should come back, and contribute and train more young people who might not necessarily want to go. But I think for me, that would be the biggest thing.
And what does the landscape look like? I mean, is there something to come back to? Is the market desirable for young talent to return once they've left, or even to pursue a path in this industry? What does it look like right now?
Well, it depends.
Okay. And I want
Correct.
you to dish out all of it.
Yeah, it depends. It depends. So at the moment, why I'm saying it depends is, if you look at, for example, the skill shortage we have in the market in Africa, it's quite high. So we need more professionals to come into this industry and actually find employment. There's a lot of employment opportunities. And one of the things we do at work, the company that I work for, is we try and train young people without matric, without degrees and diplomas, to actually consider cybersecurity
Oh,
as a profession.
fantastic.
So there's a huge skills gap, because a lot of seasoned professionals are leaving. Right? Now, the nice thing is, when you look at the European market, there's a lot of opportunities for people to go there, and there's a lot of opportunities for people to earn very good salaries. But we must also be cognizant of the fact that the cost of living is different, right? I was in Germany, I think, last month. No, not last month, the month before, in March. And just the cost of living in Berlin is very expensive. So with the high salaries that you get outside of Africa, you must also remember that it comes with the high cost of living because some of their services actually do work. You know, their public transportation services, they do work, so you have to pay for that.
They
And
do work.
so the market is there, it's ready, but when you look at the South African or African context, the salaries are not as high, but you are more likely to have a bigger piece of land on which you can, you know, farm your vegetables and things like that.
The money
Whereas
goes
in
a
Europe,
long way.
you stay in an apartment with a good salary. So there are trade-offs. At the end of the day, one has to decide which market actually works for them.
Yes, I guess it depends what people are looking for. All right. Now, there's no Pan-African firewall. Some countries have cutting-edge regulation and others just have none. How do we secure a continent when our digital defenses are so fragmented?
So I think that's a very good question. And maybe another question that we might need to discuss before then is how do we secure Africa when we buy our stuff from the West? Right? So, you know, recently, well, not recently, I mean, this was during Trump's first term in office. He banned the company Huawei from selling anything within the US because they believe that they had backdoors in their systems. Now, the question is, okay, we see that, but how much do we actually trust the West who sell us most of our technologies in terms of are they putting backdoors to sort of try and spy in terms of what's happening in Africa? We don't know that.
We
So
don't.
I think the first question we need to answer is, how do we as a continent begin to manufacture and develop our own tools that are locally based in Africa that we can trust? You know, of course, we have these challenges between nations in Africa, but definitely Africa looking after Africa interests is much better than the West looking after African interests. So I think for me, that's the first one. But in terms of when we say a Pan-African firewall, the reality there is when it comes to the internet, it's almost every country for themselves because the regulations are different in each country. For example, here in South Africa, we've got different data protection laws. For those who don't know what data protection laws, it's just laws that govern how your personal information as a citizen is protected by those who process and work with that data on a daily basis, on a day-to-day basis. So, for example, you buy a SIM card, you submit your ID, your proof of residence, which they always ask for. So that information needs to be protected, right? And in South Africa, we have the POPI Act, which sort of tries to get to the level of trying to protect that data on behalf of citizens. So when we look at the African context, we don't have a POPI that applies to throughout Africa. POPI is South African.
Poppy is South
Some
African.
can yes, some countries have data protection laws, some don't. When you look at Europe, for example, the whole of the EU Union is having one data protection law that is enforced throughout the EU, which is the GDPR. You know, for me, the reason why I'm talking about the governance aspects of cybersecurity, not necessarily a physical firewall, is we need to start with putting some frameworks. You know, the foundations of our building to protect Africa. We need to come to a stage where Africa needs to come collectively and say, look, we need to protect each other in Africa, and we need to have a data protection laws so that when the West violates them, we can find them. You know, if you go on Google and you find out how many companies have been fined under the GDPR, you find Google, Meta, all of these big US tech companies have been fined billions by European Union for violating the data protection. So I think we need to start there where Africa comes together and develop a way to protect data of African citizens. on the continent. And then once we get from there, we can then start thinking about, okay, maybe we need to start developing our own hardware, our own tools, our own software, maybe even our own operating system. And I think we're capable.
Do you think this is something that could happen though? Because, and this might be a conspiracy theory, I'm happy to unpack it. But it seems to me like some of the things that aren't right about our countries, our world, and whatever other sphere are because there are people benefiting from the inefficiency or from the loophole. So do you think something like this is actually possible to achieve because it would be in the best interest of Africa, obviously, but nobody would then be left disadvantaged for it being put in place?
Look, I like conspiracies. I think conspiracies allow us to think outside the box. But at the same time, my view is that if we always hold an opinion that the country or the continent and its leaders are never going to bring anything useful, we'll never see anything useful in our time,
Ever, ever.
right? So I'm always of the opinion that, look, I think in terms of our leaders, of course, it can be elements of corruption. We can't remove that from any country, actually. But we always have to be hopeful to say that what have they developed? How can we support? And is this actually useful for us going forward? Because you always find that they do develop something that is useful for citizens, but do we actually recognize it and realize that it's actually there?
I we're not even educated. We don't even know what's happening.
Yes. Or we always listen to the news, because I think on the news, you never hear anything positive.
No, nothing.
Yeah, it's always doom and gloom. So those are the ones that we debate on for a long time, you know, debates on things that the not so positive news of the news. We debate on that a lot. So I would say we need to maybe afford our leaders an opportunity, or even we need to find ourselves in leadership positions where we can enact change. And once that change is available, we need to then tell people that this thing is there now. You can make use of it. It's not like it's like, you know, it's like transferring money to the people back home. You can always do that in the villages.
I'm so happy that you're bringing up leaders. Do you think this is a conversation that can be had at the G20?
So I believe so. I believe so, because if they're not talking about how we can uphold the integrity of leaders at the G20, then I'm not sure what else they're talking about, because you can talk about innovation, and without integrity, innovation is lost.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Some people say cybersecurity isn't just about tech and it's very much about trust. Now, if people don't feel safe online because of everything that's going on, the truth is development stalls, right? And it falls back to what you were saying about if you hold on to these conspiracy theories, then nothing will move. So how do we build public awareness without breeding paranoia?
So I think we need to have more educational programs that sort of take people through what could possibly go wrong and why some of these trainings are important. And I think a program like this one today that we're having should at some point build trust between the listeners of this show and the show. Because it just shows that the show has their interest at best. At heart, that's the interest at heart. So I think that's one way that can happen. Another way is the constant providing information on what is new, what's useful, what's important, things that people can pivot from to, in terms of transitioning their business to the next level, you know. Because I think that for me, that's the most important part. We don't listen to the show so that we can just gain information, you know, after the show. We're like, that was good. And then we pack it. It's for us to be able to take our businesses to the next level, for us to be able to take our ability to do things, new things, to the next level. And I think for me, that's important. That should be the foundation of building trust in terms of these type of problems.
If you could fix one thing today, perhaps a policy, a mindset, a system, or even a habit, you know, something as micro as a habit, what that, and if that thing could immediately make us safer, what would it be?
Ooh, that's a big one. If I was just to think, look, on a personal level, outside of the corporate office, WhatsApp would block every link that is sent on there.
Yo!
I'll tell you why.
Okay. I'm thinking about all the YouTube videos, the TikToks, the PDFs.
Those are fine.
Okay.
The challenge is, you know, when someone sends a link that's a phishing link, that's got the appeals of a phishing link. You know, Pella, on WhatsApp, it shows you a preview of what that link is about. So people click on these things and they're hoping that their circumstances will change now that this information has been shared with them. Right? And those who have fallen victim, the rate at which they forward those messages, wow. Sometimes you see a message that says it's been forwarded
many times.
And you're like, wow. So for me, on a personal level, I would want to change that.
So you believe people maliciously say, if I got caught, everybody is going down with me?
I don't think they know.
Oh.
So they genuinely, you know, the challenge is the power of selling.
Mm.
If you are in the retail space and you're selling stuff, your business is selling. The power of selling, my father used to be a pulp author. He used to sell books for a living.
Yeah.
The power of selling is in the stories of others. You know, this is why Ponzi schemes and triple M schemes work.
We want to know who it worked for.
Yes. Yeah. You know, your friends will invite you for a braai.
Yeah.
And then when the braai is finished, they'll say, listen, we've been doing this thing. We want you guys to join my team.
Yeah.
So the power of selling is in who has found that link useful. And that's where scammers have really excelled when it comes to they put this link and someone just keeps forwarding it and forwarding it because they themselves feel like they've benefited from this. And they might not see immediately that it was a scam. By the time they realize, it's too late.
And it also works on a personal level, trust. Also works on trust. If I trust you and you send me a link, I'm like, oh, then it can't be that bad.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. 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 So on a corporate level, if there's one thing I would fix or I would want to do is I would want people who run their company to have, you know, an undo button, right? A control Z on the keyboard. and this will allow them to, when they've fallen victim to a business email compromise scam, they should be able to undo that.
Very quickly.
Very quickly, because you know, with business email compromises, two major things come out of that. It is someone sending an invoice, but let's say, for example, I own a company and I'm supposed to send the invoice to you. Someone intercepts that and then forwards their own invoice with their own bank account details there to you. So that's the first one. The second one is in transacting for, let's say, buying property or so on.
Yeah.
I want to buy a property at your house. I want to buy it as mine now. And so I go to a conveyancy, and the conveyancy tells me these are the account details. I transfer the money in there. And then they tell me they're still waiting for the money because someone has intercepted that communication and has inserted their own banking details. So that tends to happen quite a lot. So I'd want businesses to be able to undo that kind of action.
Yeah.
Because when you're now 300,000 short as an individual, who do you go to? Because now you have agreed, you have signed the offer to for purchase. So you must go and find the 300,000 because the seller needs to sell the house and you have agreed. And the conveyancer says to you, give us the money because you agreed to do this. And you say to them, you guys sent me the wrong email. And they're saying to you, we didn't do this. So I would want people to be able to do that because a lot of money is lost in our country today. And it's very simple how it happens. You know, the money is transferred into a legitimate bank account.
Legitimate.
But that bank account owner was at a shea bean and someone tapped them on the shoulder and say, would you like to make money? So I'm going to deposit money in your account.
Oh, no.
Just go and withdraw it. You keep 60, 70% of the money. I just want the 30%. And that's how money is lost. Because you're going to find that guy with the 60, 70% if you're lucky. But the 30% is gone because he doesn't even know that person. They met at the shea bean. And that tends to happen in our economy at the moment quite a lot, where money is, you know, they'll take 300,000 and deposit into 10 accounts. That's 30,000. And the 10,000 is gone from each of those. So 100,000 is gone from the scam. You might be able to recover about 150 to 100.
Oh, but no, man.
Money is lost that way.
And whose burden does it become at the end? The one who paid the money into the wrong account? Because
yeah,
it wasn't my fault.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Oh, no.
Look, there are cases where individuals have sued the conveyancy. If you can prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the issue was on their side or the compromise was on the SMME side, then they have to pay that 300,000. But now what you're thinking about is that is 300,000 that company never had that they have to pay now.
Yeah.
Those are people's salaries.
Yeah.
And tomorrow when that company retrenches, it's because of this whole business email compromise.
So now you're sitting with the moral dilemma. Do I fall or do the chips fall?
Yeah.
Eesh.
More or less.
Eesh. Lastly, yeah. let's wrap up this conversation. I'm such a curious person. We could go on and on. I want us to touch on the future. What excites you the most about the cybersecurity space in Africa? Where are the breakthroughs, the innovations, untapped opportunities that we should be paying attention to?
All right, that's a lot of questions.
Ah, it's one thing. You can just tell us one of those.
Look, the excitement in Africa is the rapid adoption of artificial intelligence.
Yes.
I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
For our African languages, I don't even know the possibilities of what this could end up with.
Yeah.
You know, when you're seeing AI interacting with our African languages and you've got these learning modules or, LLMs,
yes.
Right? It's amazing. For me, I think that possibility could lead us to maybe be able to communicate with other Africans in my own language.
Ah, you know, so beautiful.
I can speak my own language and someone can actually understand me. I think that would be great.
Now, knowing you,
the other
continue.
Yes.
I was about to say, knowing you, you're probably thinking about some of the threats that come with that exciting innovation.
Yes. So the challenge with that is, imagine that whole system being interrupted by someone intercepting.
Yeah, and they interpret
and changing,
the wrong thing.
Yes, and changing the interpretation between two people.
Yeah.
And let's say, for example, they're exchanging money.
Yeah.
Right? So that person then goes home angry because they feel like the person they met betrayed them.
Mm.
The African they met betrayed them. When it's actually someone else would intercept it and put themselves in between that communication.
Yeah.
So I think for me, those are the challenges. But there's a lot of exciting things with artificial intelligence that are coming.
Mm.
And I think the future looks bright.
Yeah.
But it also looks challenging.
As with every good thing, I guess.
Yeah.
Mr. Mutemwa, thank you for not only securing networks, I mean, in your profession, but also helping secure narratives. You know, this conversation for me wasn't just a point of enlightenment, right? I think, as you said, the point is to empower. We're not sharing entertaining news. We're literally just saying, hey, be on the lookout. These are the things that could impede on your growth, but also that could blindside you. But if you're aware, and if you take the time to actually tune in to what you're about to click or what you're about to interact with, it makes all of the difference. So thank you for coming and thank you for sharing your wisdom yet again. Please don't tire of us, Yazi.
It's a pleasure.
Don't tire. Thank you so much. And before you hang up, to our listeners, I just want to say you don't have to be a hacker to be part of the cybersecurity conversation, whether you're running a business or you're building a brand, or simply navigating the online world, awareness is your first defense. I want you to be smart. I want you to be sharp and a little more cyber savvy. And today, our guest has helped us with exactly that. Thank you so much for the chat. It was amazing.
Thank you.
Cheers. Have a lovely evening.
Thank you. Bye.
And that is it, folks. That is the podcast. Ooh, papa. That is the conversation. That is the big interview.
You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.